We're joined right now by a Yahoo Sports columnist. On top of that, he is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the executive producer of Killer Inside, Aaron Hernandez, Netflix doc. If you have not seen that, you should. It's awesome. Author of the Epic Athlete series, co-host of the College Football Inquirer, still our nation's foremost Bush Light enthusiast, and I consider him a good friend of the program. He is Dan Wetzel. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. Not easy to follow Coach Drinkwitz, though.
Oh, man, you wouldn't even believe. You probably didn't hear it. He was out of his mind. He was incredible, and it leads us into
hysterical.
The best. All right, so it leads us into this. Like, I want to get into conference realignment with you in a moment, but why don't we pick up the conversation that he actually started? I want to talk to something that was actually a little under the radar last week, but no longer. The news that Tennessee was hit with a notice of allegations regarding 18 recruiting allegations. These happened under former head coach Jeremy Pruitt, and alleges that his wife was involved as well. I mean, Dan, the financial amount of these violations was not that big. So just how stupid is this entire thing?
Best part is his wife was a former compliance director when she worked at Florida State and Troy. So you have a former compliance director allegedly making car payments for recruits, which I don't think you have to be a compliance director. You can be a casual college sports fan to know that probably is against the rules, right? It was amazing. It's only $60,000, but obviously they do it because it works, or they think it's going to work. But first, these were done. A lot of these visits were done. They didn't hide it at all. Like, there were hotel rooms with the coaches' names on it. And credit card bills with the coaches' credit cards and things like that. Really dumb stuff. Communications not done on burner phones. Really basic NCAA cheating 101 that Tennessee should be far better schooled in. But, like, first off, they were taking visits during, like, the COVID dead period. So, like, every school in the country is like, okay, no one's allowed to allow recruiting visits because of COVID, right? Then, even if it wasn't COVID, these were still during the so-called dead period of the recruiting calendar. So you're not allowed to have anyone on for COVID. Then you're not allowed to have everyone on anyway. And then when you have them on, you're not allowed to give them a hotel room, buy them meals, take them out to things. So they just kept, like, piling on the violations. And, I mean, I imagine as a case, this was pretty easy for the NCAA to be like, this is all wrong. Just not a lot of wiggle room for Tennessee. Now, the beauty of college sports is this. By causing these violations, Jeremy Pruitt may lose out on his $12.6 million buyout. So the University of Tennessee was actively participating in the investigation of their own violations because it will help them beat a $12.6 million buyout. That's college football at its finest.
That is so great. And then it's not so great for a reason I'll get into in a moment. Dan Wetzel is joining us. One more thing about the allegations. We're also talking about things like, you know, the hotel rooms, the airline tickets. However, a trip to the Ripley's Aquarium of the Smokies, a $225 bill at a nail salon, $225 at McDonald's. I mean, things like that. Your point is also extremely well taken, that they actively are involved so they can get out of paying him, so they're helping investigate. But if that's the case, and that's the way we're going, are we not concerned, Dan, that we're going to lose some of the awesomeness and weirdness of cheating scandals like this?
I am terrified we're going to lose them because they drive so many great storylines and high comedy through the years and put these characters out there. But even with name, image, and likeness, you still can't pay someone's car ticket, right, or to car tab. There are still rules that are in place of what you can and can't do. So some of these, yeah, were, you know, a million restaurants they went to, you know, Chick-fil-A breakfast and stuff like that, which, in fairness, pretty good breakfast. You know, that might do it. It might swing you. But all the different antics on this thing. I mean, the penguin show at that aquarium in Gatlinburg, really good, Rome, really good. You should check it out. You can see why that's the one. It doesn't take much to realize why Tennessee stunk. other than to know this was how they were trying to get the recruits.
Well, no, I understand. Right, exactly. That tells you why they stunk and why they sucked. What it doesn't tell me is why they hired Pruitt in the first place. And even more importantly, Dan, how absurd was it that they gave this guy a raise after his second year?
Well, they hired Pruitt because the fans decided to revolt that Greg Schiano wasn't a good enough coach. So they ran out the athletic director who tried to hire Greg Schiano, and they basically let the fans make the hire, and they hired Jeremy Pruitt, who wasn't in any way capable of being a head coach. And that came out, and then you have all of this that follows from it. And they brought back, because they fired John Curry, their AD, they brought back Phil Fulmer to be the AD. And for reasons no one understands, after 2 years, he gave Pruitt a contract extension. Not that anybody on earth was going to try to hire him away. Gave him anyway, and that's what built up this huge buyout. But then in the end, they're going to get bailed out on the bad contract extension and buyout because Pruitt and his wife were out there spending money on everybody. So, according to the NCAA report. So again, it's a circle of nonsense that is just so uniquely college football. You don't have to be a volunteer fan to laugh at it. And actually, if they get out of the money, even the volunteer fans are kind of laughing at it.
A circle of nonsense, Dan Wetzel joining us. I mean, such a circle of nonsense that I haven't even gotten to the real stuff. But before I let you go, let's do some of the real stuff. Not that that's not real right there, because that is. But part of the changes in college sports are involving USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. It's clear what they bring to the Big Ten, Dan, in terms of revenue and recruiting. But how do you see them fitting into the Big Ten from an identity standpoint? I guess what I'm asking you is this. Is there enough Bush Light in Southern California for you to declare it Big Ten country?
Well, look, there's a perception. You live in Southern California. There's a perception that it's just craft beers or fancy cocktails out in California.
Fair.
But California's a big place, big diverse place. So is in L.A. There's plenty of Bush Light getting sold, plenty of Natty Light, plenty of Big Ten style beers out there. They'll fit in. They'll fit in quite well. I think it'll work. It'll take a little getting used to, but especially UCLA, but even in some ways USC. There are so many Big Ten alums in L.A. that they are going to sell out their stadium probably every – now, maybe a little bit like the L.A. Chargers, where there's a whole lot of Wisconsin fans at the Rose Bowl for a UCLA game. But if you're trying to make money and stuff the coffers of the athletic department, like having every game against Big Ten schools where millions of – collectively millions of Big Ten alums live in the city is a huge benefit. So – I think it'll take a little adjustment, but I have faith in the Bruins and the Trojans. They'll get in on the fun.
No, you're right about that. We have a son who goes to Wisconsin. I was at that Rose Bowl game. There was a whole lot of red. So you're right about that. Let me ask you this: how badly would the Big Ten like to add Notre Dame? And then this time around, how do you see Notre Dame approaching all of this?
So they would like to add Notre Dame because Notre Dame is the one school out there that's not in the ACC that has real value in terms of television. And part of what taking UCLA and USC did was not just add the LA market and improve the television draw of the Big Ten. It also decimated the Pac-12, which was as these networks go to look for college football inventory. The Big Ten was the big fish that was out there because the SEC is already tied up. So everyone's trying to bid on the Big Ten, but you could make a case that the old Pac-12 with USC and UCLA was a pretty good plan B, not a bad alternative. But when you strip them down, you increase your demand by limiting the supply because the new Pac-12 doesn't have nearly the draw that it had. So now these television networks are more desperate. Even more desperate to get in on the Big Ten package. So it's like a dueling way to rise your revenue. It's like if there's two houses in the neighborhood, not only do you add an addition, but you tear down their addition and their house looks worse, your house becomes more valuable. So that was part of it. They would love to get Notre Dame, but Notre Dame is not going to go unless they believe that their access to the college football playoff, they have to join a conference to maintain that access. They should get a nice number from NBC when they renegotiate their deal, which is up in a couple years. Will it be as high as the Big Ten? No. Will it be, you know, let's say the Big Ten schools are getting $100 million. Could they get 60 or 70? We'll see. If it's close enough, and that could be even 30% below, Notre Dame has enough money to cover that. They're not going to worry about it. They don't have as big of an athletic department as, say, Ohio State or Michigan. Notre Dame has tons of money. No one's ever been on the campus of Notre Dame and said, boy, this place is poor. So they can make up the revenue gap. I mean, they literally paint their most famous building gold. So they can make up the revenue. What they need is access to that playoff, because if they have access, they can recruit. And if they can recruit, they can do well. It's the biggest thing in recruiting is, can you win the championship? Gonzaga basketball recruits an NBA lottery pick every single year, even though it's in the West Coast Conference, even though it's way up in Eastern Washington, because they Mark Few can say, hey, look, you go to the NBA and you can go to the Final Four here. That's enough. It's not that much different for Notre Dame. So as long as Marcus Freeman's out there saying we can win the title, we can play in the playoff, and you can go to the NFL, we're going to be fine. So they're not going to get Notre Dame unless that playoff thing changes or the money doesn't come in for the Irish. And the way Notre Dame's program is rolling right now, I expect that money to come in for the Irish.
Dan Wetzel, my guest. Extremely well said. Dan, one last thought, if you don't mind. So when you talk about a neighborhood with two houses, the two best houses, then you got the other teardowns, what about the neighborhood overall? Like, are we talking about, when you look at SEC expansion and Big Ten expansion, are we not speeding towards a neighborhood where there's just two houses? I mean, two massive conferences for college football and then a bunch of other conferences and schools that just really don't matter at all.
Absolutely. We went from, you know, at one point we had the Power Six, which included the Big East, and then that got torn down. And then you still had the Big Ten, the SEC, obviously, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12. It was the Power Five. Well, now we're looking towards the Power Two. And whereas the ACC is a little bit behind competitively, and then the Pac-12 and Big 12 are trying to hold themselves up, but they've lost it. So we're moving closer and closer to just two conferences. And you could see it set up, you know, where, you know, do you have 20 or 22 teams in each of those two leagues? And you basically have an AFC versus an NFC. And you play in a Super Bowl. You know, is that how you do it? The SEC has a playoff one day, and the Big Ten has a playoff, and then you meet in the Super Bowl. All of that's the kind of stuff that television executives want, because they give you huge numbers. 6 million viewer games, 8 million, 12 million, 14. They're trying to create an NFL light. For everyone who just loves college football in totality, this is not what you want. The people like me who love the sport in that way, we want Washington State to be competitive and have a chance. We want Blue Turf and Boise. We want the TCU and SMU to have a rivalry game. We want all of it, all the mayhem. We want Iowa State to matter in different ways. It doesn't mean they're ever going to win the championship or beat Alabama. But right now we have 130 schools competing for one championship. They come from all shapes and sizes, big cities, small states, military academies, religious institutions, little private schools, big state schools. It's the chaos that makes it so much fun in totality. And that's running counter to what the TV guys are trying to say is, I don't care about a television game that only cracks 500,000. I need more 5 million. I get that, but that's where the balance between business and what the tradition of the sport really is. That's a very fine line to walk for these guys.
It's amazing stuff. Such good stuff. And we did not even get to what I wanted to ask you about the Patriots, so I would encourage the listeners. Dan Wetzel's got a great column up about Bill Belichick right now at Yahoo Sports. You want to check that out, too. He is a Yahoo Sports columnist, a New York Times bestselling author, and EP on the Aaron Hernandez Netflix doc, and many other things, Bush Light enthusiast as well. Dan, really appreciate you. Great job as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rome. Always fun.
You're the best, dude. Always fun. And then I'll do my normal Wetzel disclaimer. I think pound for pound, he is the best sports columnist in America because of his range and his depth. Dan Wetzel writes the hell out of anything and everything, and then shows up like that. You know, there's certain guys that can write the hell out of things. And then there's certain guys who can write the hell out of anything and everything, but it doesn't mean they show up like that for a podcast or a show. And he does. That's an extremely talented individual. Always great content. Really quickly, before I go to break, going back to Eli, I love that you clones understood the magnitude of that moment. The way he came out and started the show. Now, if you know anything about him, and Dan Wetzel does, of course, he's hilarious. But if you know anything about Eli, you know that this is how this guy goes. But even for him, that was next level material.